An alle Aufsichtspersonen, verteilen Sie jetzt die Aufgabenbogen für die BMP im Fach Englisch. Die Prüfung beginnt in einer Minute. An die Kandidatinnen und Kandidaten, beschriften Sie jetzt das Deckblatt der Prüfung. Achtung! Lesen Sie die Aufgaben erst, wenn der englische Text beginnt. Berufsmaturität Wirtschaft 2023. Englisch Serie A und B. Sie können jetzt zur ersten Aufgabe gehen. This part of the examination consists of two different listening comprehension tasks. There will be pauses before and after each task to give you time to read the questions and to check your answers. You will hear each task twice. Task 1. Open Air Music Festivals Conference. In the first part of the test, you will hear someone welcoming participants to a conference for organizers of open air music festivals. As you listen, fill in the gaps 1 to 11 in the notes below. In some gaps, more than one word is necessary for a complete answer. You now have 60 seconds in which to look at task 1. Ready?
Well, welcome everyone. It's tremendous to see so many of you here. My hope for all of you at this conference is simple, that you will all leave here tomorrow evening knowing precisely what makes for a successful open-air music festival. Successful for you, the organizer, successful for the artist performing, and successful for those attending your event. An event they would not have missed, and which they will rave about with family and friends. To kick off, let me briefly run through what we'll be covering during the conference. In the first session, we are going to consider festival sites. We will look at typical problems that can arise with landowners after you have agreed with them to use their property for your open-air festival. A legal expert will explain how you can avoid such problems, and certainly the most common ones, by making sure that they are covered in the contract you sign with the landowner. Another area we will look at in session one is the issue of facilities. Festival goers judge a festival not just by the music, but by the quality of the facilities. On the panel for this session, therefore, we will have representatives from companies that provide toilets, catering facilities, and other services, like secure lockers and childcare. Finally, session one will consider the impact of weather on open-air festivals, and what you as an organizer can do to plan for bad weather in terms of indoor or covered stages and other areas. The second session will focus on the entertainment, the music. We will consider and discuss the various ways that festival organizers choose and book artists, which will include, of course, the role played by agents, especially when you are booking big name artists. We will also look at how best to give local musicians a chance to play at your festival. One increasingly popular way to do this in recent years has been to hold a competition for young and rising local talents in the months before the festival, with the winning band or artist getting a slot at the festival. Very specifically, we will discuss what voting procedures to use in such a competition, a voting system that invites the local population to vote, or a system where music experts are the judges. Both systems have their advantages and disadvantages. In session three tomorrow morning, we will focus on staffing, and in particular, how to go about getting volunteers to work at your festival. What can you offer them to make the volunteer work appeal to them, and to ensure that you are not short of staff? Some roles, however, at open-air festivals can only be filled by professionals. Security, for example, is absolutely key, and most festival organisers are seriously advised to employ, at the planning phase, a professional security advisor. Even if the actual policing of the festival, if you like, is done by your volunteers. In the fourth and final session tomorrow afternoon, our focus will, first of all, be publicity and promoting your festival in order to maximize attendance. We will look at the role of social media platforms and the importance of targeted online advertising, as well as on public transport and in other contexts. Finally, we will consider the crucial issue of pricing. It is vital to avoid putting off some potential customers, especially the young, by charging too much. A range of prices is often a good idea, such as discounts on tickets purchased in advance. All these options and more we will discuss. Well, that, in a nutshell, is what awaits us. The first session will begin in around 30 minutes at 9 o'clock here in the main conference room. So if you haven't had a coffee yet...
Now listen again and check your answers. Ready?
Well, welcome everyone. It's tremendous to see so many of you here. My hope for all of you at this conference is simple, that you will all leave here tomorrow evening knowing precisely what makes for a successful open-air music festival. Successful for you, the organiser, successful for the artist performing, and successful for those attending your event. An event they would not have missed, and which they will rave about with family and friends. To kick off, let me briefly run through what we'll be covering during the conference. In the first session, we are going to consider festival sites. We will look at typical problems that can arise with landowners after you have agreed with them to use their property for your open-air festival. A legal expert will explain how you can avoid such problems, and certainly the most common ones, by making sure that they are covered in the contract you sign with the landowner. Another area we will look at in session one is the issue of facilities. Festival goers judge a festival not just by the music, but by the quality of the facilities. On the panel for this session, therefore, we will have representatives from companies that provide toilets, catering facilities, and other services, like secure lockers and childcare. Finally, session one will consider the impact of weather on open-air festivals and what you as an organiser can do to plan for bad weather in terms of indoor or covered stages and other areas. The second session will focus on the entertainment, the music. We will consider and discuss the various ways that festival organisers choose and book artists, which will include, of course, the role played by agents, especially when you are booking big-name artists. We will also look at how best to give local musicians a chance to play at your festival. One increasingly popular way to do this in recent years has been to hold a competition for young and rising local talents in the months before the festival, with the winning band or artist getting a slot at the festival. Very specifically, we will discuss what voting procedures to use in such a competition, a voting system that invites the local population to vote, or a system where music experts are the judges. Both systems have their advantages and disadvantages. In session three tomorrow morning, we will focus on staffing, and in particular, how to go about getting volunteers to work at your festival. What can you offer them to make the volunteer work appeal to them, and to ensure that you are not short of staff? Some roles, however, at open-air festivals can only be filled by professionals. Security, for example, is absolutely key, and most festival organisers are seriously advised to employ, at the planning phase, a professional security advisor, even if the actual policing of the festival, if you like, is done by your volunteers. In the fourth and final session tomorrow afternoon, our focus will, first of all, be publicity and promoting your festival in order to maximise attendance. We will look at the role of social media platforms and the importance of targeted online advertising, as well as on public transport and in other contexts. Finally, we will consider the crucial issue of pricing. It is vital to avoid putting off some potential customers, especially the young, by charging too much. A range of prices is often a good idea, such as discounts on tickets purchased in advance. All these options and more we will discuss. Well, that, in a nutshell, is what awaits us. The first session will begin in around 30 minutes at 9 o'clock here in the main conference room. So if you haven't had a coffee yet...
This is the end of task one. You now have 30 seconds to check your answers. Now turn to task 2. Task 2. Running. In the second part of the test, you will hear part of an interview with Sarah, who shares her passion for running. For questions 1 to 7, mark the best answer. A, B, or C. You now have 45 seconds in which to look at task 2. Ready?
Sarah, you didn't even own a pair of running shoes until you were in your 20s, did you?
No, that's right. My childhood and teenage years were spent avoiding sport in any form, and I felt cool being a couch potato. Now, however, a decade and a half on, I'm fitter and healthier than I ever was as a child or teenager, and have taken part in hundreds of running races, including 10 marathons. So how wrong I was. I can't actually remember what it was that first motivated me to go running, but whatever it was, I'm so thankful for it now.
Now, for people who don't go running, how would you sum up the main advantages of taking up running for them?
I would say to them, you'll find that no other form of exercise gets you the results you want. Give it a go and stick at it, and I promise you three things. Firstly, every muscle from the waist down will become firmer, while excess body fat will reduce noticeably. Secondly, you'll feel great about yourself and have a real sense of achievement as you slowly become fitter and stronger. And thirdly, you'll find that running is very easy to fit into your life.
Okay. Easier to fit into your life than other sports?
Yes, very much so. Unlike an aerobics class, for example, you don't have to be somewhere at 6 o'clock on the dot. Unlike swimming, you don't need a pool and don't have to get to the pool. Unlike tennis or squash, you don't need a partner to make it happen. You can go for half an hour in the early morning before work, grab 20 minutes at lunchtime, the perfect home office sports break. It starts the moment you walk out of your front door.
But Sarah, is running really for everyone? I mean, there will be people who say, I'm too old or I'm just too overweight.
Okay, these are real concerns that people have, and they need to be taken seriously. But I would say to almost anyone like that, no, you're not necessarily too old or too overweight. I know people in their late 60s who have taken up running, and others who, yes, were overweight, but who now wouldn't give up running for all the world. They have seen the benefits and only wished they had taken up running much earlier. But it's not one-size-fits-all advice. Every person is different.
Okay, so what initial advice would you give to someone who is thinking of taking up running?
Well, first off, a word of caution. You must approach running with patience and with respect. If you go out on day one, all guns blazing, so to speak, you'll end up aching, disillusioned, and possibly even injured. The golden rule in the first few weeks is to start and build up slowly. And don't compare your progress with other starter runners. Some beginners progress quickly, others more slowly.
And concrete running technique? Your tips there?
Well, if you remember one thing from this interview, relax. Unclench your fists, relax your jaw. Yes, your jaw. And keep your shoulders loose. Don't hunch, but look up so that you run tall, as we say. And remember to use your arms. Picture them like pistons in a motor, propelling you forward. Though keep them bent at roughly 90 degrees. Arm movement is particularly important when going uphill. It makes an enormous difference.
Okay, and what about breathing?
Well, despite all the theories you hear or read about breathing in through your nose and out through your mouth, or breathing in time with your feet, I just recommend getting the oxygen in whatever way feels most comfortable for you.
Finally, Sarah, do tell us about the Get Running program that you are involved in as part of the Town Council's Sport for All project.
Now listen again and check your answers. Ready?
Sarah, you didn't even own a pair of running shoes until you were in your 20s, did you?
No, that's right. My childhood and teenage years were spent avoiding sport in any form, and I felt cool being a couch potato. Now, however, a decade and a half on, I'm fitter and healthier than I ever was as a child or teenager, and have taken part in hundreds of running races, including 10 marathons. So how wrong I was. I can't actually remember what it was that first motivated me to go running, but whatever it was, I'm so thankful for it now.
Now, for people who don't go running, how would you sum up the main advantages of taking up running for them?
I would say to them, you'll find that no other form of exercise gets you the results you want. Give it a go and stick at it, and I promise you three things. Firstly, every muscle from the waist down will become firmer, while excess body fat will reduce noticeably. Secondly, you'll feel great about yourself and have a real sense of achievement as you slowly become fitter and stronger. And thirdly, you'll find that running is very easy to fit into your life.
Okay. Easier to fit into your life than other sports?
Yes, very much so. Unlike an aerobics class, for example, you don't have to be somewhere at 6 o'clock on the dot. Unlike swimming, you don't need a pool and don't have to get to the pool. Unlike tennis or squash, you don't need a partner to make it happen. You can go for half an hour in the early morning before work, grab 20 minutes at lunchtime, the perfect home office sports break. It starts the moment you walk out of your front door.
But Sarah, is running really for everyone? I mean, there will be people who say, I'm too old or I'm just too overweight.
Okay, these are real concerns that people have, and they need to be taken seriously. But I would say to almost anyone like that, no, you're not necessarily too old or too overweight. I know people in their late 60s who have taken up running, and others who, yes, were overweight, but who now wouldn't give up running for all the world. They have seen the benefits and only wished they had taken up running much earlier. But it's not one-size-fits-all advice. Every person is different.
Okay, so what initial advice would you give to someone who is thinking of taking up running?
Well, first off, a word of caution. You must approach running with patience and with respect. If you go out on day one, all guns blazing, so to speak, you'll end up aching, disillusioned, and possibly even injured. The golden rule in the first few weeks is to start and build up slowly. And don't compare your progress with other starter runners. Some beginners progress quickly, others more slowly.
And concrete running technique? Your tips there?
Well, if you remember one thing from this interview, relax. Unclench your fists, relax your jaw. Yes, your jaw. And keep your shoulders loose. Don't hunch, but look up so that you run tall, as we say. And remember to use your arms. Picture them like pistons in a motor, propelling you forward. Though keep them bent at roughly 90 degrees. Arm movement is particularly important when going uphill. It makes an enormous difference.
Okay, and what about breathing?
Well, despite all the theories you hear or read about breathing in through your nose and out through your mouth, or breathing in time with your feet, I just recommend getting the oxygen in whatever way feels most comfortable for you.
Finally, Sarah, do tell us about the Get Running program that you are involved in as part of the Town Council's Sport for All project.
This is the end of the listening comprehension test. You may now proceed to complete the remaining parts of the test.